Welcome to the Dieter Mellhorn Fishing Podcast. Whether you like to fish, enjoy talking about fishing, or just enjoy the fishing lifestyle, this is the podcast for you. So go grab yourself a cold drink or a hot cup of coffee, sit back, start tying up some fishing rigs, and enjoy the show.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to the Dieter Mellhorn Fishing Podcast. I hope you're having a good day, whatever day it is that you happen to be listening to the show or watching it. You can now watch the video version of the podcast on my YouTube channel. Some of you folks may be watching the YouTube channel and know that there is a actual audio podcast out there that is on all the popular podcasting platforms that are out there and available. And same name as my YouTube channel, Dieter Mellhorn Fishing, and same name as my website, DieterMellhornFishing.com, which is a great place if you're listening to the podcast to reach out and contact me. A lot of people want to drop a message, drop a note, drop an idea, tell me the podcast sucks, you need to change this, whatever the reason it is. The website's the place to go to, DieterMellhornFishing.com. And if you're interested in a guide trip, there's a link there to all the guide trip information that I have. I do guide trips here in the Carolinas along the Catawba River chain of lakes, which is near Charlotte, North Carolina. So all that information is on the website. All you guys who are return listeners and YouTube watchers, I appreciate it. Thanks for your patronage. Thanks for checking out the podcast, checking out the videos. And anybody new, welcome. I hope you like it. I try to put these podcasts out fairly often. I'm trying to get more and more consistent with them now that our studio is finally finished and we got everything in place here up and running. Got our catfish there over the shoulder from the folks at Catfish Clothing. Thanks for the light there to dress the wall up a little bit in the background. Always check out Catfish Clothing. The links are on my website. Use the promo code CATFISH. You can get a discount from them. So thanks, guys. I appreciate that. And today we've got a pretty cool guest. I was just back from the Catfish Conference a couple weeks ago. And when I'm at the Catfish Conference now, I try to tape podcasts, tape interviews, get content, because there's a lot of people there from the catfish industry. For you guys that don't know what the Catfish Conference is, it's basically a trade show. It's a fishing show, but it's catfish-centric. Everything is focused on catfishing and fishing for catfish. You can get stuff for other types of fishing, but there's a lot of catfish gear there. And this is the first year it's been back since 2000. They finished up the show in 2000, just a couple of weeks before the bottom fell out with the coronavirus and shut down, and they didn't have one in 2001. So 2002 was like the big reunion, and it was packed. A lot of people there. It was a great show. A lot of good people. Met a lot of you guys that watched the YouTube channel, listened to the podcast. Always enjoy when you come up and say hello. Never hesitate when you see me at one of these places to come say hello. I love talking with you. Sometimes I'm 100 miles an hour and zipping around, but I love hearing from folks. So thank you for coming by and saying hello. And one of the things I taped out there was a podcast with a new Hall of Famer, the Catfishing Hall of Fame. The ACA, American Catfishing Association, started a Hall of Fame for folks in the catfish world. And they had their first banquet and award ceremony at the Catfish Conference this year. So something new they added was this Hall of Fame. And my guest is in the introductory class for 2022, and that's Steve Douglas from Monster Rod Holders. Got the hat and the shirt on here in honor of him. Steve, I need a new shirt. Check the order basket. My shirt's getting old. Great guy. Most people know him from the Monster Rod Holder business. But Steve, really, before that, was fishing for catfish, fishing tournaments, that kind of thing. And he's got a YouTube channel. Obviously, Steve Douglas, the catfish dude, channel that a lot of us, myself included, kind of was a motivation for getting into the YouTube world. And on top of that, he's the guy who was part of the team that created the initial Catfish Conference, the trade show. So we actually taped this podcast with him just a few minutes before he was inducted into the Catfishing Hall of Fame. It was actually right after this. They had the ceremony and the big induction and everything that went on. So I got him right before, but he's a Hall of Famer now, and it was really, really cool to sit down with him. You're going to find some stuff in this podcast you probably did not know about Steve. And that's the thing I love about these podcasts is we got the time to just sit and talk, and I got some really good stuff out on him. So let's sit back, enjoy the podcast with American Catfishing Association Hall of Famer, Steve Douglas.
Where did you grow up at, Steve? Where was little Steve? Where was little Steve when he was a little boy?
I was born in Indiana, lived in New Albany, and went to school up to sixth grade. In New Albany, Indiana, and moved to Kentucky when we was about 12 years old. So I spent my seventh grade year in Kentucky from then on, and that was Bardstown, Kentucky.
Now, from what I've heard you say, you kind of grew up in the country?
Country, yep.
You remember the first fish you caught?
I do.
Tell me about it.
Well, when I was in Indiana, actually, the school I went to had what they called a heyday, and every Friday, the teachers would take the students out and they'd get to do like career days. One time I chose veterinarian, I got to go scoop up dead animals from the street. Don't know what that had to do with veterinarian or not, I don't know. But second time I went fishing with a teacher. She took us to a lake and we caught bluegills. And then the next time I went back by myself, now granted I was like third grade, and I rode my bicycle like 2 miles to a lake, caught the heck out of bluegills, brought them back home, got my butt whooped. And I'm gonna tell you why. Because a third grader is not supposed to be driving 2 miles down the road to a lake and catching fish. Now, that being said, I went right back to that lake, caught fish, but I didn't bring no fish home and I didn't tell mama I went anywhere, so.
It's funny, you're the second podcast I've done in 2 days here at the Catfish Conference that involved a butt whooping. One of them was Joey Baird because he stole a pack of hooks out of a tackle store when he was like 4 or 5 years old. So, describe the area you grew up in. What kind of childhood did you have there? What was that place like?
Well, I'm going to say my childhood really started when we moved to Kentucky. I just was down in Boone. I got out in the woods. I was more on the rivers than I was anywhere else. They wanted me to play football. I was a big, burly guy when I was a young guy. But the football just didn't interest me. I wanted to be hunting and fishing, and that's kind of what I did. It was like, I'm lucky I got married because I was in the woods so much. I didn't date a whole lot when I was 18 to 20.
Yeah. Now, what was your fishing world like then? What were you fishing for?
My local river was behind me, and I would walk through the field from my house to the river. I'd kick over cow patties, collect the worms in a can, and go to the river. I'd have a pack of hooks, some split shot, and maybe some egg sinkers. No leaders, none of this fancy stuff. It was a hook, an egg sinker, and a split shot to hold the egg sinker up, and I just threw it out. We'd catch carp, we'd catch catfish, we'd catch what I call white perch, but since learned that they're called drum. So that's the pretty much the extent of it. And we'd set bank poles, you know, the normal stuff. We'd get cane poles and drab them in the bank. You wouldn't catch a lot of big catfish. We'd catch a lot of eels and different stuff, but that was it. I just was like Daniel Boone when I was little.
Yeah. So what happened? You get a little bit older. A lot of kids, you know, the common thread in a lot of these stories is you do a bunch of this when you're little, then you get 16, 17, you either get a job or you figure out there's girls or you go in the military or something. What was your evolution there at that point?
I really didn't have a evolution. I spent a lot of time fishing. I spent a lot of time at the beer joints playing cards at my young age. In Kentucky, if you're 16, 17 years old, and actually probably younger, back then you could go to the beer joints and partake in the pool and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I did until mom said, you need to get a job. But I was making a good living playing pool and playing cards. But then that's when it all, when I was about 18 to 20 years old, I had to actually start leaning towards an adult life, and that's where we're at today.
So
I got married.
Your first entrepreneurial effort was a pool shark and a card player.
Most likely.
See, that's something we've never heard. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. So what did you do work-wise? What was your first little foray there into the working world?
Work-wise, probably hod carrying for a bricklayer. And then I learned to lay brick. And then my senior year, I remember all the seniors prior to my year got to get off a half a day and go work. My year, they said, no, we ain't doing that no more. So I told my principal, I went in there and said, I'm going to quit school. I got this good, and I had a good job. Back in the 80s, I was making $12 an hour.
That's good.
And all I was doing was carrying bricks to the bricklayer and hod and stuff. So,
You're basically the tender guy that gets everything to him so he can do the craft.
Right.
Okay.
And then eventually I was the guy up there laying the brick and stuff. But again, my mom said, hey, you need to move out, get a job or go to school. And I had a little day job or whatever, so I ended up going to school and learned the appliance repair. And I had a business up until 2008, until I just gave it up and went fishing.
So let's go back to that appliance business, because this is more of that entrepreneurial spirit.
Okay. Oh, I got plenty of entrepreneurial stuff to you. I got some stuff that you probably won't even believe.
Well, I want to hear it.
I got an ostrich business in the 90s.
What business?
Ostrich. I had ostriches, I had emus, I had rheas.
Wait a second. How do you decide I'm going to have ostriches? Tell me the thought process on
money.
This.
Money. I visited a farm close to me, and this dude was making hand over fist and money, and I bought a pair of birds, and I wanted to get into it. And, you know, we made some good money in them birds. I made probably $60,000, but that particular entrepreneurialism, like Friday night, I was getting $10,000 a pair for birds. Monday morning, I was giving them away because nobody wanted them anymore. That's how fast the market dropped.
Now, what do we do with ostriches?
Because it was going to be the new meat.
Oh, okay. This is going to be the new white meat or whatever.
It's dark meat, and it's really not even that good, but I let people talk me into it. It was fun while it lasted. I got injured a few times trying to reach out and grab birds running 40 mile an hour.
They're a strong animal.
Oh, yeah. And they're a dangerous animal. They get you down, you know, they'll stomp you with it. And they got them big. But, yeah, I got all kind of stuff, entrepreneur. I've never worked for anybody in my life. Maybe once.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I worked when me and Lisa first got married. I worked for an overhead door company.
Mm-hmm. And they Is this hired, like garage doors?
Yeah. And they hired me to troubleshoot automatic openers because of my background in appliances. And I didn't like that. I had to go to Louisville and I had to listen to what they wanted to say. And so I just did my own thing. I went to school for appliances, and during that time in my appliance schooling, it was a 3-year course, and I got out in like 13 months. But my teacher was always like, you got to get in here on time. But I was always, you know, once I learned a little bit, then I started my business. Appliance business. I was selling used stuff on it. While I was learning the craft, I was still working on them and selling them as well. So at a young man, like 25 years old, I had my own business.
That's fascinating. I'm still spun out on the ostriches, though, because that's just not one.
Well, I got another one.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Yeah.
Bring it to me. I want to hear it.
Before I lost everything, where I was at, I had built probably a 3-acre Asian water garden, and I raised koi and big expensive koi and tilapia indoors. Wow. But I had this elaborate maze of walks and rocks. I ordered big boulders and stuff to be dropped off, and I started off doing this by hand, digging ponds by hand, and had the little pretty goldfish, ain't they cute? And then I said they ain't big enough, so I dug a bigger one out, and then I got me a tiller. Till, and it make it looser. I got the pond a little bit bigger. It still wasn't big enough. So I traded my bass boat I had at the time. This was in 95. I traded my bass boat for a bobcat. And then I went to digging holes, big, nice ponds, and we put the rubber liners in. And it was, I hated to lose all that. But
so you basically had like a lazy river of like
ponds and gardens stuff. And
I know those fish, those koi sell for a lot of money. One of my friends actually, who not into fishing but into he listened to this podcast, mm-hmm. He's told me some of the prices some of those fish bring overseas, which is crazy.
I probably had about $60,000 in koi And in one winter, when I in 2008, when I lost everything, we had to move. I did move my koi, but the next winter, I didn't put hay in my pond, and it froze over, and every one of them fish died. I mean, I had 15, 20 pound, nice, beautiful koi.
Wow.
But that was another one of my entrepreneurial things. I got into gardening, and that's I've never worked for anybody, and I probably never will.
Now you said 2008, you lost everything.
The economy.
Okay.
The economy. I owned that business. I had some nice property here, some nice property here. I let the real estate kind of guy tell me, let's auction both of them at the same time. He did it. They didn't bring nothing near like it was supposed to, so I just sold everything I had and went fishing. And that's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Best thing.
So you went fishing. At mm-hmm. that time, were you fishing for catfish or still bass fishing?
I was catfishing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because when I first met you, I remember you had the bass boat, but you were fishing for catfish out of it.
Yep. Yep. That was that same boat. That's the only thing I owned after 2008. That's the only thing I had in my name.
Wow. And what were you doing work-wise at that point? Had the rod holder business started then?
Or, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, barely.
Okay.
Barely. Mm-hmm.
So you had that.
I just hustled until things came around and anything's game, you know. So.
What gave you the clue on rod holders of all things?
I wasn't trying to get into the rod holder business. It's like that one fish broke my line and, you know, a new guy, this was like 2004 or something like that. I was the new guy into the fishing and there wasn't a whole lot of rod holder options out there. And I had those little 3/8 inch Walmart cheapies. I'm not going to say which brand it was because I'm not really even sure, but it broke and took my stuff out the door. In my mind as a new angler, that was my 100 pounder. I've missed it. Never going to catch a 100 pounder again. And I went home and made some rod holders. And of course, you know, I was on the tournament scene for years and folks just started seeing them and said, hey, I want some too. And here we are today, 15 years later maybe. And, you know, my business generates nearly $1.5 million a year.
Yeah. And at that time, there really weren't that many rod holders around. Like you said, you had mm-hmm. something you'd get at Walmart or something like that, and that right. was about it selection-wise.
Mm-hmm. But I made rod holders that are specified to our species.
Yeah. Bigger and heavier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And wider. That's the problem with these catfish rods. They're so wide and bulky, but the smaller rod holders, kind of when you got a 50-pound fish fighting, it's hard to get out of a inch and a half space. It's better to get it out of a 2-inch space.
Right. So what was getting, once that started to grow, what was that like? I mean, it's one thing to make a few of them for your buddies here and there. And what did you experience there? Because that's at a whole different level of entrepreneur once it starts cranking up. What was that growth?
Well, I really didn't even know what I was doing. I had to learn as I went. You know, at first I started dipping with the cold dip. I think the other guy does that right now, and I just weren't satisfied with that. And then I found out what I needed to dip with, and that was a very expensive kind of deal. I started baking these things in my home oven. Like, I cooked my cookies in it, and then I baked my rod holders right in behind them as we got orders. And I did all this in my basement for years. And we built a business, probably a $500,000 business in my 1,400 square foot basement. We'd have to carry all the raw material down, rod holders and all, bake them, pack them, and bring them all back up. So it was hard in the beginning,
yeah.
But it's...
Well, did you have any scary times along the way there? Because there's most everybody, you know, I did one with Kayla Page and talked about, you know, he said the biggest thing that when he started his rod business was the first time he had to give away money to Zach Royce for catching them record fish because he almost went bankrupt. He wasn't banking on somebody actually catching one. Did you have any of those trials along the way?
I wasn't. I mean, the worst I did was, hey, you win a Cabela's King Cat and I'll pay you $1,000. I never thought anybody would do that. So that hurt a little bit during a time I didn't have money, but I wasn't going to renege.
Right.
But Caleb Page just needs to learn not to put that much money out or get an insurance policy or something.
Yeah. Well, I heard that he had actually, it's gone up on how much he's going
to
pay.
Yeah, he told me $20,000.
Yeah, which is crazy. I commend you guys for taking that kind of risk. And along the lines of risk, The Catfish Conference. In the beginning, nobody knew what the heck it was.
We didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, half the people thought it was a biologist symposium, and they didn't know what it was. How did that idea come about? Take us back through that.
Well, Jeff Jones Marine contacted me and wanted to give me a boat to run for their business, and I agreed to do that. And one of the employees that was there pushing the boats at the time, his name's Jim Hopper, I believe, he said, "Hey, Steve, you think we could have a fun day? I'll invite everybody out and we'll have some cocktails and drinks and snacks and stuff." And I figured I could probably draw 200 people to the event. And I really didn't know what it was, but actually I got tangling with Catfish to drive from Illinois. I've got Fat Boy Rods to drive from Iowa. I've got a bunch of people to drive just to set up their at that time rods or other things that they sold for Catfish.
And that was what year?
2015 or 2016. And we end up supposed to open at 8. Most people are supposed to open at 9, and most people were actually sold out by 9 because we couldn't keep them out the door. I mean, we had approximately 1,500 people come in this little garage of Jeff Jones Marine, and we had to push motors to the side and everything just to get guys in there. So, but after that, it's just kind of snowballed.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So it probably wasn't even a big leap going to the Crown Plaza. That's where it was first, in a hotel, basically banquet room. Yeah. Looking back on it, it's kind of funny to almost imagine that you could get all that in there. So that probably wasn't a big leap into that, I would not think. Or was it?
It was a big leap because Jeff Jones was free, per se. The Crown Plaza, you know, everything starts getting expensive now because for some reason hotels and convention centers think their stuff is made of gold. Yeah. So we have to do negotiations, but I think it was better to have it in a different spot than that. And then, we stayed there for 2 years, and then we realized we needed to go somewhere else because we got a picture one time, and it was shoulder to shoulder. It's like people couldn't even walk through and see things because there were so many people in there.
It was nice. It was convenient. You could stay right there in your room, but there was no room in the thing.
Yeah, I would love if they had 100,000 square foot over there for us, because I like leaving there, going to the restaurant, going to my room, and not having to drive and leave anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You make the jump here to the Kentucky Expo Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's a massive complex. Obviously, you don't have all of it. Massive complex. How scary was that? I mean, you're moving on up like the Jeffersons here, you know?
Well, it's not really scary because I'm kind of confident. And I don't want to say confident. I'm kind of sure that the community's behind us on this. What's difficult is, like I say, dealing with the people who think they have gold. I mean, like specifically like the curtains we put up around through there. We're realizing we're going to have to buy them ourselves because I spent $10,000 on just curtains to put up, and that's ridiculous. So nothing's really scary, I don't think. If you're not used to being an entrepreneur or being in business for yourself, it could be scary. But a guy like me, you have to take chances, you have to gamble. I guess that's the gambler in me.
And yeah, that's kind of like, I think, part of it. It's almost like that 17-year-old gambler shooting pool and stuff.
Yep.
You figure if you sling enough, you're sooner or later you're going to get it.
Well, here's what I live by, and that's what I learned in 2008. Because you cannot, if you want to be in business doing something, you have to be in business doing something. You cannot be working a day job, climbing poles, electric poles, or whatever you do during your day job, and work here at night. A part-time thing's not going to work if you want to do it. If you want it, you have to live it. I can remember when I first quit in my appliance business. I'd see trucks going down the road and I'd feel bad. I'd feel guilty. Man, I need to be doing that. But then I'd have to think to myself, Steve, you don't do that anymore. You fish for a living. And it took me about 6 months to get over that. Now I can see a truck going down the road, sucker. So it's...
So you feel everything you've done has been a smart move.
Yep.
All right, so we're here, this conference this year. More people than I've ever seen at one. I assume that's what the numbers are going to show. And we're doing this with high gas prices and coming off of COVID. What's next? I mean, what do you, without going into any super secret, little entrepreneurial plans. I mean, what's the ceiling on this? Where does this, I mean, what is the future on this?
I want to get one more permanent event on the, I can't talk about West Coast right now because it's way too far, but I want to get another permanent event on the East Coast. Somebody's been hinting around about a CatCon on the beach. I don't know how that would go over, but I do know we're going to have it probably in June because that's the spawn most of the time for everybody, and most guys are not fishing. So we're looking forward to that. We already have our Kansas show. That's a permanent show at this point. So we're growing, most definitely. And like I say, this is the, I knew this one was going to be the biggest one ever. We had so much support as far as vendor-wise this year. I knew the people had to come. And I was really surprised. I don't know if you've seen my live I did yesterday, but I walked out the front door as people were waiting to get in line. And it's probably 500 or 600 feet to the front door from the, through that lobby. They was all the way down, and then there was a tail that whooped back that came up and probably another 300 feet. So we had 800 feet of people waiting in line to get in here Friday morning. Now, I've seen that on Saturday morning before, but never on Friday. Yeah. So it's been amazing.
What do you think it is? What is it that makes it work?
I think mostly is they missed the 2020. Our 2021, I can't remember where we're at on it.
21 is when we couldn't do it because of COVID.
Yeah, the COVID. I think people just tired of COVID, tired of all that, and they want to get out. I've seen like 3 people wearing masks in this whole facility for the last couple of days. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to wear a mask, but I think just people are all over it, and they're ready to get out and have some fun and spend some time with themselves.
And I've talked to some people that have been to other fishing shows, and they always say, man, you go to some big fishing show, there's nothing catfish there. It's like nobody, I mean, there's nobody set up with anything. And then you have a show that's all catfish, and it's packed like one of the bigger shows. What does it say about the catfish community, the people? I mean, they eat this stuff up.
They do. They do. And there are new people coming. I've talked to so many people today that says, hey, man, I seen your videos. You got me started. Now, and they're, I look at this fish they're showing me, and they're showing me 30, 40-pound fish. So everybody's excited, and yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Well, there you go, folks, an ostrich farmer. Raise your hands if any of y'all thought Steve Douglas was an ostrich farmer at one point in his life. It's the reason I like doing these podcasts, guys. Most of the people I get in here, I try to pick people that I can really sit back and peel the onion back, so to speak, and get a glimpse into their life, who they are, where they come from, what they're about, and some stuff that you're probably not going to hear in a fishing seminar somewhere or on their Facebook page. So I appreciate it, Steve. Nobody deserves to be in the Catfishing Hall of Fame more than you. And the cool thing is we got a lot more that we're going to see and hear from Steve down the road. And a lot more that we're going to hear from some other anglers that I take podcasts with at the show. I've got several other people that I got podcasts with while I was there. So stay tuned to the channel in the upcoming weeks. I've got some fishing guys. I got a guy who does actually fishing replicas. It's similar to mounting a catfish, but it's not really mounting. We'll go into that in one of the podcasts. And just some cool people, some cool information, and some cool insight and nuggets into people in the catfish world. So appreciate you listening. Appreciate you checking it out. We'll catch you guys out on the water.